get you Raymond Wise and Bugabody about to get you right. They've been telling the truth and they're setting the vibe. You can get into it too if you like and subscribe.
All right. We back in action. Hey, friends.
Hi.
Hello.
How are y'all doing? How's everybody doing this week?
Stressed. It is like been a very. It has been a very, very, very busy day today for me, and I am ready to hit the hay. Honestly, probably as soon as we get done, I'm going to just lay down and go to sleep.
I'm actually with you on that. And it's crazy because today hasn't been like a crazy busy day. I just feel I think because yesterday was a long day, I'm just exhausted today now is what it really is today. Yesterday was a long day for me. So like, I definitely am like, I'm feeling it today where I'm like, I have no more energy, like none, like not at all. So yeah. How you feeling, Bo?
I feel fine. Pretty good. No notes for my week. I had a full weekend that was very social and full of great activities. I went to go see Kid Fury from The Read, his stand-up show.
Yes, I saw that.
Great job. I am so proud of him. And then, of course, Sunday, we went to see the illustrious Lester J.
Saturday.
So much happened. Like every day it was some different social outing. But one of our friends, Lester, shout out to Lester J, he did a concert at Epiphany Arts Center, and it was a tribute to Al Green on Al Green's birthday. And when I tell you, a time was had.
For sure.
It was great. I was so proud of him.
It was. I like being at events like that and just be screaming in the back,
and everybody was doing it. It was great.
It was a cultural experience.
Did you
see
the white man in front of you that after who was bowing?
Yes. And
bowing.
He was bowing to Lester.
The most iconic part of that is they came in like right after me and Miles.
Yeah.
And the guy turned around and was like, "Have you all seen the show? Is it any good?" Like very skeptical. And I was like, I don't know how to process that. So I was curious how he was going to like go through the night. And I was like, yeah, it's a real good show. Like I know this person, but I was like, no, I'm not going to say too much.
Right.
And by the second song, he was 100% in. He's standing up clapping. He is dancing. Right. I'm like, girl. Okay.
Also, be invested. No tea, no shade, white man. But it is a house packed full of niggas in their Sunday's best.
Yeah.
What
did you think was going to happen?
You think we come out?
You thought it was going to be a... Right, for what? We're not coming out for no trash. Not on a good day. Not on the day that was like Saturday was beautiful weather.
Listen, the demographic of older aunties who were out, you have to factor in like they're not going out on a Saturday night before church. The Sabbath, you know, like literally church is in the morning.
Listen.
So if they are here in some clothes that they could have worn to church, but now they got extra clothes to wear something different to church, it's good.
Baby. It's for a good time.
Okay.
And then it was a good time. It was a good time. I really had a great time. And of course, always, you know, supporting friends and seeing them do their thing and their elements is always really, really fun. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, for me, today is actually my Sigmaversary.
Hey.
I'm 14 years old in Sigma today. So it's kind of like interesting because yesterday was the first meeting for the new chapter that I chartered. So it's like kind of like a full circle, like, ooh, like I'm 14 years in and like I'm, you know, helping with building some new stuff. So that's really cool. But yeah, it was a long weekend. Like, I mean, there was just like a lot of activities and a lot of restaurants, which I'm just finishing up some of my... We've been doing this thing where we go to like black restaurants and let me tell you, the one that I just went to, they did that. It was good.
Did you go to the one that I suggested to you on Saturday? No.
Okay. No.
You have to go to that one.
I think we should do at some point we need to do an episode, or me and Ray have been working on a list to try to like compile a list of like great black like restaurants or black owned restaurants to go to. We should really come when we compile it, like we'll share it with everybody, because especially in Chicago, because there's some good places that y'all should like really check out. So yeah. But yeah, any other updates? Like, I mean, we, you know, like what's the, we ready to get into it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have too much. I have a premiere coming up, but I'll wait.
Yeah, oh, yes, 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 yes.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I want to talk about it yet. So
we can wait. We can wait. We can wait.
Because I haven't seen excited. It. That's the thing. Like, I haven't. Right. And, like, I know it'll be great, right? And yeah. Sure. Right. But, like, I haven't seen it. So I'm like, I want to see it first. Yeah, I'm not going to get to see it first. So I'm like,
nope.
Intimate, close friends good. And family only, please. Thank you. The rest of you can see it when it goes public.
I love it. Well, it sounds like we all are, for the most part, at a pretty good space in the week. I agree with Randy. It's been like, woo, it's been a day, but we're there. Mm-hmm. So as you all know, this is Black Inquiry. I'm Raymond Wise.
I'm Bo Batty.
And I'm Randy Nigel.
And welcome to the group chat.
The complexity of navigating society with intersecting identities can be overwhelming. For Black men, there's an expectation to suppress vulnerability and femininity, to exude confidence and avoid curiosity. Is this pressure why some men conceal their true selves, fearing judgment for not conforming to stereotypes of strength? Concealing one's true identity can stem from fear of societal stigma. But do individuals owe the world an explanation of who they are? Should they feel obligated to announce their true selves to their community? This week's episode is DL Men. Whew, child, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Ooh, I mean, where do we start, right?
Well,
I think I've, yeah, go ahead, Bo.
I was going to say, I feel like as this part of queer identity doesn't really come to my neighborhood, I think we can start things off just like getting that out the way and calling that out for what it is. Like, I think Randy mentioned it maybe last episode or something, where it's like women are allowed to explore and experiment and, you know, make out at the club and it's hot or it's fetishized or it's like encouraged. Mm-hmm. But if a man does it, then he gets written off as gay and he gets pressure and you suddenly don't have the ability to experiment or try around. Like, you can't hook up with a guy and just to see what it's like and then come back and say I'm straight, because there are some people who will always just see you as gay. So I think that's like a really good place to start, and just like, where do you all find that comes from? Like, how do we like get past that? And not, have you ever been guilty of it yourself? Whereas, you know, someone who maybe dabbled and then now they're straight and you kind of are still looking like, well, are you?
Ooh, girl, you just asked like 12 questions and I'm like, ooh. Jesus. I'm like, hold on. Which ones do I want to attack first? Because that last one about if they were gay and then now they're like not, like, because that's a thing. That is a thing.
And okay, we'll start with where do you think, I mean, obviously misogyny, especially misogynoir, right?
For sure.
The roots of men not being given that freedom to explore.
Yeah. I think a lot of stuff, I'd be like, take it back to slavery. A lot of it does kind of come back from that though, right? Where, just being emasculated. And of course, like the idea of being, especially when it came to like slavery and masters, the best way for them to try to mentally destabilize a slave, especially as like a slave man, was to, to sexually assault them, you know, in a manner that was not consented, right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of stigma behind it, because that is something that had been kind of introduced. And even if somebody might have been, you know, same gender loving at that time, the way that is introduced is as if it's something that's bad, right? So that stigma of it being a bad thing or something to shame you, which is really the bigger part of where I think a lot of like DL experiences comes from, is the shame. There's so much shame around being same gender loving, because we've been taught that it makes us less than, and we've been taught that being same gender loving automatically means feminine, right? Which has, again, equally as a bad thing, been said to be like a bad thing or to be less than, right? So I think it's that shame of feeling like less than, less than a man, if you will, which has just been kind of perpetuated over the, over centuries, right? You know, over years. And I think it's just something that's hard to break in the mentality, because you have so many people that have advocated for it and have supported being like, yeah, if you do this, then you're not man enough. And it continues to be like an ongoing thing. I would like to believe that the DL man like culture is lessened than it was, but I don't know. I don't know if it's still like as prominent as it was, because I feel like so many things people are so more open and so more, they're just more open than they were previously. But I don't know. I don't know if like the DL experience is even the same. I know there's still dudes out there, but you think about like the rappers now, like there's a lot of rappers who are coming out that's queer, and you know, so it just makes it like more like, okay, like if this rapper can come out and do that, then maybe it ain't so bad. Maybe I won't be completely ostracized. Right. But there's levels to that. That was a long way to say that.
I'll definitely say, I think superiority in general is like very fragile. And I think when it comes to men, like in order to uphold this idea of men are higher up or better than everybody else, I think gay men and queer men and effeminate men directly work against that because of their proximity to what we consider women to be. You know what I mean? And I think we see the same thing when we look at like black and white people. Like black people are seen as the other bookend to white people. So if white women get seen as soft, then black women get seen as masculine, or like they end up being the direct other opposite. And I think queer men, kind of like light-skinned people to the black community, happen somewhere in the gray area where they aren't necessarily one or the other. They kind of serve to like disprove the trope a little bit.
Right.
And I think because of that and a lot of other like systems that we have going on, because I think we will be remiss in this conversation if we don't mention the church. I think those two in particular things, I think masculinity and manhood being so fragile, and the PR stunt that has been done on queer people by the church, are the two biggest factors, in my opinion, that perpetuate like DL culture. Because not everybody is going to have the strength to stand in the fullness of who they are. You know what I mean? Not everybody's going to be on the front lines. That's just not how this works. We see this with every single ism and phobia.
Yeah.
Like if we look at the natural hair community, there are a lot of people who would love to embrace natural hair that aren't going to, because they don't have it to go out in the world and actually be critiqued for the natural hair that they have. That's just the world we live in. Like, and I don't think it's their job. And I guess that's where I'm going to struggle in this conversation is I think sometimes as queer people, we feel a need to be like, well, damn, why don't y'all just come out? And I do feel like that a little bit. But at the same time, when you look at their struggle compared to a lot of the people in the other movements, you can see that like, there are people hiding out in every movement. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
There are people in the natural hair movement who are going to cover their shit with a wig because they are afraid. There are people in the plus size body movement that are going to cheer for other people being body positive and hide themselves.
Absolutely.
That is just it. And they exist in every movement. And I don't know that they have to come out and have to speak.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think probably one of my biggest hot takes is that I don't feel that everyone needs to necessarily come out. Because I feel like there are plenty of people, straight couples who never actually come out. There are straight people who you never see their partner. I mean, look at Oprah and Stedman for the longest time. Like there are many scenarios where, you know, people keep their romantic life to themselves and very private. And when hetero people do it, no one seems to bat an eye. But when a queer person does it, then it's they're in the closet or they're DL, or and it's not so much that they even have to like lie. They can just choose not to disclose. And that seems to upset people, especially if people feel that someone is queer and that person refuses to disclose, then they're like, well, they're queer baiting. And I'm like, you can have a conversation about straight people being queer to get profit. But in some of these instances, I don't think it's queer baiting. I think it is them having some business and keeping their business to themselves, because we don't need to know everything about everyone all the time.
Yeah.
As long as you're being respectful and honest with the people that you are in relationship and community with, you don't owe it to the world or every space you're in to come out as queer. Like, yes, we have people who gave their lives and fought, and we have Stonewall and all these major events. People have literally fought for people to be able to be out and live their lives truthfully and openly if they choose to. But people also have the right to say, you know what? I don't talk about my romantic life. And that's fine.
And it's just weird. And I don't know how y'all feel about this because we haven't actually talked about this. But like the term coming out always like gives me a little bit of like an ick because it kind of feels like queer baptism. Like I feel like you, you come out of the closet and you have decided that you are going to walk in your homosexual faith.
You walk in freedom.
Yeah. And that it really just, and I hate that. I hate that all of the terms associated with queerness are all like pejoratives. Like for trans people, it's like if they don't tell or they don't disclose, it's like, oh, well, I was tricked. That's the dialogue we get. It's tricked.
Yeah.
Hoodwinked.
Which is dangerous because people die from that.
Yes. They use it as a, I forget what the law is called, but there's a law that they use to justify like harming trans people when they feel like they were not adequately disclosing. And it is just so crazy. And then, like, the term coming out, it's like to feel as if we have to disclose everything. Like, it's just so weird because nobody else has to. Like, nobody else has to say, hey, this is my identity. This is who I am. This is how I love. It's just us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also just feel like, I think you made a really, really great point about how it's always seen as like a, I don't know, I feel like people feel like coming out is like a glorious thing.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, when you think about it, it's so much, it's not always that. And I feel like maybe five times, maybe seven times out of 10, it's not. So I can definitely understand why somebody may choose that they don't want to disclose something like that. Especially when you're in environments that are not conducive to accept you. So I completely understand it. Now, I do think that there are things that have to be, that we have to be mindful of if you choose to not disclose, right? Those type of things,
still
right?
Be honest with the people you're involved with.
Yes,
there's a respectful way to do it and there is a wrong way to do it.
Right. And I think that's where the connotation for DL gets such a bad rap because it's this idea of like secrecy. And I want to be very clear. I think there's a big difference between discretion and like what we would consider as DL. I think there's a massive difference between that because I've dated plenty of guys that are extremely discreet. Like they don't want everybody in our business. They don't want, you know, they don't want to post everything on Instagram. They don't want to, and I think that's fair, right? But there's an honesty between us about what the expectations are for us and how we dwell with each other. I think what's been the connotation for DL guys is that it is this idea of it being secrecy to where nobody needs to know because of the fear of like, the fear of the repercussions. You know what I'm saying? And I think that I think there's a difference between those two. And quite frankly, for DL men, I get it. Like there definitely are some ways in which that can be harmful or that can be traumatic for you, depending on your environment. So I do get it. And I think that my conversation is always, you know, just honesty with it, right? Like I feel like people should have the choice if they want to disclose or don't disclose. To up until the point where you are now crossing the boundary of somebody else's ability to make a decision, right? That's where I feel like if you're crossing over to the boundary where your decision is now impeding on somebody else's ability to make a decision, then that's where we have to recalculate and say, okay, like there has to be a conversation or transparency around what, you know, X, Y, and Z. Yeah. But it's very interesting. And I just feel like I always find it interesting. Like the down low term just is, it sounds negative, right? It immediately,
yes, it
makes
is.
You, because you
nasty.
Think, because you think, I mean, those are two, if you think about it, most of the time, those are two words that are typically
synonymous
for a negative, right? So, I'm not up today, I'm down. And it's like, yeah. And it's like, oh, I'm not high today. Depending on how you talk about, but I'm just saying, like, I'm not in high spirits. I'm in low spirits, right?
So it's so it's always that thing, and like kind of like you said, where it's like, you know, the black versus white, where it's like it's always looked at as the negative. And I just think, you know, I wish there was a different term for it. I don't know what.
Yeah,
and the fact that it's so it's so synonymous. And this is the thing too. It's really only black gay culture.
So yes. Okay. So two things. One, I'm going to back up a bit. The law that Randy is referencing earlier when talking about the laws that are in place to use as a defense to harm queer people are usually trans women. Let's just call it what it is. It's called the Gay and Trans Panic. And it's a defensive legal strategy that seeks to partially or completely excuse crimes such as murder and assault on the grounds that the victim's sexual orientation or gender identity is to blame for the defendant's violent reaction. Mm-mm. Now, no state recognizes gay and trans panic defenses as freestanding defenses under their respective penal codes, but defendants have used panic defenses in conjunction with other defense strategies to attempt to reduce the severity of their charges or sentencing. And the gay and trans panic laws are very active in the majority of the states. It's easier to list the states where they are banned. Illinois is one of them. Of course, you have California, Washington, New York. You're more liberal states, but the majority of the country still allows this as a defense that can be used, like tagged on with another.
Which is wild.
Call your representatives. As for where the origin of DL came from, it stemmed in the 1990s. It was a slang term that originated from the black community, and it was used to describe information or activities that should be kept secret. However, with the rise of queer culture being more visible in the 90s, specifically with white people, this term started being applied to men who engaged in homosexual activities or secret sex with other men. That's kind of how we got there. And I think it's important to note that when we started seeing queer culture kind of come to more of a rise, you know, we still had racism in this country. And I will say, as much as we as a Western culture have progressed as far as desegregation, not to like take it all the way back, but as far as like, you know, we've been around each other for a long time now, but you still had these subgenres of communities that were still not welcoming or accepting of the other. So even when you saw, you know, gay pride being on the rise and more actual gay parades and things happening, they were still very white spaces. And black men were often not safe in those spaces, or it was, you know, white men going to sneak to get some black pink bean on the low.
Fetishize.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which still happens.
And does.
But yeah, that's how we got to DL.
Yeah.
I also want to add that DL being applied to black men in the black community, just based off the stats that I pulled up and the timing of when it really took off and when it shifted from being just anything like cheating on someone or stepping out or behaviors that was meant to be secret. It seems as though when it happened in the 90s, we also started to see the rise of HIV and AIDS.
I was about
to say
that.
And black women were heavily impacted also by HIV and AIDS. So then you started having the crossover between men who were DL and unknowingly infecting spouses, girlfriends, lovers, hookups, whatever.
Right. Yeah. And I was actually going to say that. I was like that. I mean, it makes sense that now that it's become more of a derogatory term based on the time frame in which, in the capacity, it was also being used, right? So it makes sense.
The interesting thing with this is, and like, I guess a query for you all is like, how much onus do we take as a society for creating a system where these people don't feel safe? You know what I mean? Because a lot of down low men, I do think there's a conversation about the harm that down low men cause. But I also think there is a conversation about how we as society have created this system that these men feel trapped inside. Yeah. And this is what is starting them on the journey to cause the harm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was looking at videos earlier. I told you all this before I got on. But like, I typed in Download Man on YouTube, and there are more than 80 videos entitled How to Spot a Download Man and How to Catch a Download Man. Those are the two most popular titles.
What?
Yes, majority of the content is that. And that's when you type in DL Men. And I was like, wow, this is so crazy. Like, people are on a witch hunt. And in every one of the videos, it was religious people or religious women who are like, oh, I married this man. And then people have all of these weird, awkward ways that they spot DL Men. Like, one woman was saying she could smell his neck.
Okay. Ma'am.
What did his neck smell like?
That's what I said. She said his neck smelled like, never mind.
But dude, you know what? What's interesting? How does she? Never mind. What I think is interesting is that just as much as, because that's not what I thought, that I didn't think that was going to be the type of videos. I thought it was going to be, because I do also think that DL men are also like fetishes for people.
Yeah.
They are definitely a fetish for people. Okay. I know girls, and I mean the girls.
Oh, that the girls. Literally, okay.
The girls that only go for DL guys, and like that is their thing. Like, there is, for them, it's almost like they feel championed whenever they get one. And it's a thing, y'all. And it blows me because to me, it's like we're being counterproductive in multiple ways with that, right? You're making them still feel like they have to, like you're championing them for not being okay with, potentially not being okay with their identity, or potentially feeling like they can't come out, right? But then equally, you're also like putting yourself in harm's way, because if you ever do something that makes them feel uncomfortable, then it's counterproductive altogether. And it's interesting. It's interesting because I will say, I'll get full transparency. Like, when I was a baby gay, like, I always wanted to, like, you know, the extremely masculine, I wanted to trade, you know what I'm saying? And most of the times, and let's be very clear, trade and DL are not synonymous. They're not the same thing. Somebody who is DL can be trade, and somebody who's trade can be DL, but they are not synonymous. Let's just be very clear about that, in case people are worried. But I've always been into, you know, like, you know, I was into like the thug dudes, the ones that was like, yo, was, you know what I'm saying? I was into that. So I can understand where there is like a...
Now, when I was talking about being into the bad boy just a mere 2 to 3 episodes ago, it was crazy. No, and you done set and now you got the audacity to say that.
And let me be very clear by what I mean. Mm-hmm. I was attracted to, hold on. I was attracted to the aesthetic. Let's be, that's what I'm talking about. The aesthetic was very appealing.
The do-rag and Tim's.
All of that was very appealing. Did I date many guys that were actually like that? Not so much, because, you know, me, they was like, oh my, lots of bears.
Look, on the other side of that coin, I definitely did dabble in the DL men for a long time. I'm from a place called Saginaw, Michigan. Look it up. And there are not a lot of queer people. It was like 4 of us, and everybody knew who we were. There was no way to be down like, the download people were straight appearing. And this is going to be a hot take, but I talked to my counselor about this earlier. Okay. And she said something that I was like, oh, girl, I'm going to repeat that on the podcast. So she said, do you think that there's a chance that toxic masculinity could affirm your femininity?
Yes.
Yes.
And I was like,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's so, me.
That's good, because that's, yes.
Because, okay, this goes back to what I was thinking when Raymond was talking about the girls who would prefer to be with DL men or with, like, full champion. And I think a lot of that has to go with internalized feelings, not so much the other person. Because I will say, when society presents this image of what a relationship should be, and it is very binary and it does fall into masculine and feminine, if you feel like you were able to secure someone who was successfully navigating in what society is expecting them to be, and when you were a kid and you grew up thinking that this is what you wanted and this is what it had to look like, you were going to find comfort in that and be like, oh yes, I did it. Like, I finally have what everyone else has. So it's the same thing with this toxic masculinity play into your femininity, because when most of the people roaming the planet, or at least in America, have this heightened sense of toxic masculinity, you start to normalize it. Oh, he gets upset and he yells. Oh, he loves me so much, he's blown up my phone. All those things are so normalized. And it is toxic, but because it is masculine, it's seen as, oh, well, a man will be a man. And if you are a woman, it's your job to do this. So, of course, you're going to believe that toxic masculinity is going to feed your femininity, because that is what's been demonstrated all these years before. That's what you grow up watching.
It is. That's it. That's
when she said that, I was like, oh, girl, there's a word in that, and I will be taking it to the podcast. Thank you.
No, that's, I mean, that's, that's, I don't even want to add nothing to that, because Bo ate that. You ate that.
I also think, though, that the negative, the downside, I mean, there are a lot of downsides, but one of the bigger ones to me is, I think when you are operating with people who a key feature in their personality is that they are having to keep this secret in order to keep their livelihood, you are putting yourself at the most, the largest margin of risk. Because
legit.
And I learned this a long time ago when I was in Saginaw. I had a friend that was a baby gay. We were both baby gays. And they were dating a down low man, and they went to go meet up with them. And they hooked up, and the person was then coming out of the house, and somebody saw them standing in the yard. And I guess, like, they were leaving and another group of men was coming to this house.
Right.
Like, full transparency, the guy was a drug dealer. So these were his clients coming to pick up their stuff. And they see this effeminate gay person standing right there. And the guy came outside, and instead of defending them, they all attacked this person. And I think you end up in situations like this. There's a high risk for situations like this because you don't know what lengths a person is willing to go to keep their secret.
And bury that. It makes me think of, I think we talked about this before, but the LA Complex, which was a TV show. And there is a, there's different segments about this, about the LA Complex. No. It's called the LA Complex.
It was a show? But
it was a show, but there was a segment of it where one of the guys is a rapper and one of the guys who is like a writer or producer, they're working together, and the rapper is like DL and the writer slash producer guy is like completely queer, and they start getting into each other. And there comes this moment where they were like, they were like, you know, trying to be intimate, and they kissed, and somebody walked in. And the boy who was the like producer looked at the guy because he could tell, he knew what was about to come. And the rapper just started beating him down. And I don't think we understand how much that actually happens. Like, those things like that happen. Just to your point, Randy, like, people will go to the extremes to defend their secret.
To keep the secret.
They will. You know what I'm saying? So I think that there is definitely, like, And to be fair, like, I haven't had as much experience necessarily dating a DL man. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I done spent some time, you know, dibbling and dabbling, but it wasn't like where we were effectively like dating for like a long period of time. It might be like a hookup here, a hookup there. But even with that being said, that was even discomfort. Like, there are times where I remember times where being like, yo, don't come through this door, come through that. Like, that type of stuff was terrifying. Because I was like, okay, first and foremost, and again, this is like a little bit more in my adult years. And like, that's terrifying as an adult that I'm still feeling like I have to hide and be secretive. And when I've been fully out about who I am, like, I've had that before. I've literally had, it just, it's not a cute feeling. So now what I will say on the flip side of that, though, now.
Look.
Now listen. Is there, and y'all can drag me if y'all want, is there a smidge of thrill that comes with this idea of like, ooh, don't nobody know this? Ooh, I just did something. Yes, there's a thrill. Yeah. Is that a little toxic? Yes. Yes, it is. And I'm okay to admit that. Because I think for some people, and going back to the people, to the girls who really are into like DL men, I think there is this thing of being like, oh, like he want me, he choosing me, that kind of thing, which sounds really good in the grand scheme. But girl, you don't know if he got three other people just like you. You don't know. But nonetheless, like, there is this thrilling of excitement, because there's always this precipice between, like, you know, I always look at it like this, like pain and pleasure. There's this thin line between it.
Well, Rick and James said it was pain before pleasure.
Listen. but I think it's the same thing when it comes to this, like, fear and, like, excitement. There's they are, there's a thin line between those two. Like, you ever been like, you know, when somebody like scared, ooh, you scare, and then you start laughing. Like, mm-hmm. it's very that. Like, so I understand it, but I also am like, ooh, I can't advocate for it though, y'all. Like, ooh, we gotta, maybe let's reconsider.
Don't think I forgot. Y'all weaseled out of answering.
Ooh.
If you've been with someone, not if you have been, but like, do you feel that you can honestly say that you know, have known of someone who is DL and yeah. then they're dating someone and now yes. like, do you, how do you, in your head, like, what do you view them as, oh, they're straight now? Do you ask for clarification? Do you just mind your business to keep it pushing? Because that's what I would do. I'm mind my business
to
keep pushing.
You know what? But, I've gotten to the point where I'm going to believe whatever you tell me. Whatever you want to tell me who you are is because to me, it's not my choice and it's not my place to decide who and what you are to you.
And I say this, yeah. And I like that a lot because I ask because I know gay men who
yeah.
know people that they've hooked up with and they see them with somebody else and they'd be like, well, he's gay because let me tell you what he was doing.
And listen, listen.
And it's like, okay, does that mean he was he experimenting?
I have been guilty of it. I will flat out tell you, like, I'd be like, now, girl, now, you know, you now, girl, I have done it. I am working on me to be better. And I think, and I, that's why I said, like, I'm now at the place where I'm just like, you know what? Let me just take people now. I was about to tell the story because there's this pastor who'd been married 4 times. And I'm like, sir. Like every 2 years he got a new spouse, but he's not DL. However, he goes from women to men. And I'm just like, okay, like live your best life. However, we can't have a new first gentleman, first lady every 2 years. Anyway, but what I will say is to the extent of it being somebody who is DL and they are now with a woman, or if they've decided that they don't mess with men or whatever it be, first and foremost, I probably am not in enough close proximity to even care to ask them, to be honest, because at the end of the day, like, that's your business. My thing is all, again, just like kind of our conversation from the last episode, is just about honesty, right? Like, I hope you're being transparent because, again, that can also emote for a, like, if you are somebody, because there are some women who are strong cold. If I'm, like, we saw it with Love is Blind.
We saw it with Molly on Insecure.
Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Like, we can see, and actually with Love is Blind, what's her name? She was actually really, like, cool about the situation. The guy was actually the problem. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, like, I feel like you, by you being DL and going into a situation where you are now with a woman and you have not had that conversation, if it ever gets exposed, you now have put yourself at risk. Because not trying to be funny, some of these women crazy too. They do what they will get you. So it's like, my thing is always about the honesty portion. If you don't want to identify, and I also think that's the thing too, maybe they don't want to identify, right? If you want to say that you're sexually fluid and you don't know how to nest, you may not have the language to say that, right? So that might be the case. Like, that's not for me to decide. But I will say I have been that girl, but like, girl, he gay. I don't care what he's like, he gay. It was me.
Look at sexuality as like a journey and not a destination. So people's sexualities are constantly like moving and changing and ebbing and flowing. And like, I think sadly, the queer community creating all of these labels and us having this constantly evolving acronym was supposed to alleviate this pressure. But sometimes I feel like with the labels, we only give people more pressure because now they feel like they have to find which box they fit
in. They have to fit in one of them.
There's so much information on each box.
Agreed. Yeah. And then once you go into each box, there's like subcategories in that box, right? So then it's like, so we're forever having to categorize. I liken it to it like if you go to a web page and there's a tab and there's another tab and keep going. And before you know it, you done went through 15 tabs and you're like, now where the heck am I? How did I get here? And I think to your point, Rainey, it's very that where we as a people feel like we have to categorize everything. And sometimes things just...
How we learn.
It's like sometimes it's okay if like there's not necessarily like a category. Like I'm very big on, and I look at it kind of similarly, but I always tell people like, if you don't have a seat at the table, stand on it, right? I look at it from that perspective where there may not be something that's available for you or what you want to identify or how you want to be, you know, known. So you have to create your own space and create your own thing. And that may not have a title. So Yeah, I just feel like we get so bogged down in categorizing everything that it does make it difficult for people to then have to be like, well, now I got to choose between, oh, well, am I bisexual? Am I gay? Mm-hmm. Or, well, if yeah. I'm gay, am I like a, am and I masculine? Gay? Am I feminine?
Like, it's fluid. You don't, it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be, agreed. You agreed. Are now gay and that's it. The book is closed. I have a friend
yeah,
who all my life I knew him, he was gay. And a couple of years ago, he was like, well, girl, I have some cat. And, I think I like both now. And I was like, okay, friend. Like,
yes,
like
go
he's
on.
Living his best, just queer life. He's like, uh-huh. I don't have a label. I just like anyone.
Yeah,
I'm
like, what yeah, I like.
It should yeah. be like that. This is
yeah.
a great time for me to tell you guys that this is my last podcast. I'm straight now. So
it's girl, I was real. About to say, well, ooh, I was about to say, well, guess what? Y'all have theory. A secret. I was about to say, I have a secret, y'all. I got some cat.
Raymond got some cat. I'm straight, which means I'm going to have a real awkward conversation with Chandler.
I literally just got a cat. Yeah, I have a cat from the... I don't want to talk about the cat that I just got from the pet store. No?
Okay. I'll talk about the cat if you want to tell Chan that I'm straight now so we can't be together.
Oh my gosh. I'm not doing it. Nah. I don't want Chan coming after me. Ooh. Okay.
Y'all made my girlfriend straight.
could you imagine if me and Randy made you straight? Golly,
girl,
what are
it
we
was
doing?
Just meant to be.
Oh my god, okay. Chan just walked by and gave me the nastiest look. Oh Chan said, I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I think it goes back to where like kind of even like when we talked about like sexual positions and things like that, or like you know what I'm saying, like to where we have this idea that it's binary, where it has to be, you have to be this or you have to be that. Like, why is it not available for us to explore with those things? Yes? You
have
a question?
Inquiry. Yeah.
Okay.
When you said even going to like sexual positions, are you referring to like top and bottom and how like that's very binary? Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Yes. What did you think I was talking about?
Cowgirl. I don't know why.
But also that because there might be some, listen, because it's all an experience, right? So like maybe all you've done was cowgirl the entire time. And maybe you're like, you know what? I want to try something different now.
Y'all lying. That, there is not.
That is your business.
Mm-mm. Ain't nobody out there only doing cowgirl. Who got the thighs for that? Y'all lying.
Somebody might.
But I do. Okay. So going back to the dating of DL, man, I have two questions. I'm trying to like.
Yeah.
Pace them out. First question is, are there rules, like if someone were in a relationship, or we'll make it more personal, if either one of you have been in a relationship with or dabbled or just hooked up with, I know Raymond, you spoke on your experience, with a DL man, were there things and boundaries in place that you made with yourself to keep yourself safe? Or did you have to like learn some of these things as you went along? And what are those things?
See, when I was doing it, and I have dated multiple DL men, I'll be honest. When I was dating them, I would like to know, like, to what extent are you DL?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it is, I am down low to everybody. Friends don't know. Like, even my close personal circle does not know the truth about me. Mm-hmm. We can't date. Now, if there are, like, layers to it and you're like, okay, my family is going to shun me and I need to stay in the wheel. So my close friends know, but my family doesn't know. I'm like, okay, well, I can navigate around your friends and we could do this thing.
Right.
but I was never going to be in the space that you didn't want to be discovered in. Like, I just was not going to ever go to that.
That makes sense.
It just was not going to happen for me. Which sounds very in a cage, and to some degrees it was. I was young.
Yeah, for me, again, most of these were like hookups. So a lot of the rules for me were more like around like, well, where do you live? what neighborhood is this? Like, right, those were more of the rules that I had. But and then also just like even at that point, I was still big on expectations. So I would have like the what you expecting kind of talk. Like that was important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't spend as much time like making boundaries because for me, unfortunately, I knew that it was a very transactional event. So it wasn't something where I was invested into like, how do I now navigate with them in the future and how do we continue to do this? It wasn't something that was like that. But it was one of those things, like I said, like there were times where I like literally like was told not to go through certain doors. You can't knock on the door. You can't do, girl, you can't ring the doorbell. Don't, y'all, first and foremost, how am I supposed to know I'm supposed to get in? But then you have to use the app. But it's like, then if they're not responding to the app, see,
I ain't got time.
Uh-uh, girl, I done drove all this way. Not today.
Let me climb through this window.
Oh my God. But yeah, I'm kidding.
Okay, no, well, I mean, maybe. You said that real naturally. I ain't never climbed through no window.
Oh my gosh. But yeah,
I
didn't
just picture Raymond jumping down, landing on the Mary J. Stompers. Running down the block.
Bundles. Yes. The air.
No. But honestly, I feel like most of the times where I would have those experiences with guys were usually probably more so at night. So it was like a lot more like discreet, I guess, in that sense, because it wasn't like in broad daylight. So those were things that were like rules where they was like, nah, like I can only see you after 8, like something like that. Like, make sure if you knock on the door, like you knock and then like step to the side. There were random rules.
Call me after my minutes are free at 9 o'clock.
They had random rules. I didn't. I had one mission.
Was, oh Lord.
I don't know.
Kim Possible. God.
Kim Possible. Come meet me if you want to reach me. Mm-mm. Oh yeah. Okay.
So my second question, I'm just curious, is what would you say to someone who's not out, specifically a man, specifically a Black man? I mean, men in general, sure, but since we are mainly talking about Black culture on this one, what would you say to someone who's not out but wants to experiment without being labeled as DL? Like, how do they navigate the space of not being out but still experimenting without having to be considered or clocked as someone who is DL? If there is a way to do that.
I don't know if there's necessarily a way to do that safely. What I will say is, I think if you stand in what you know yourself to be experiencing, I think that you will find like-minded people. So I would hope that if you are a down low Black man, you are not sitting in spaces that are shaming queer people, and that be that men spaces or female spaces. And I think if you occupy female spaces where the women are having open dialogue about this and they are comfortable like with you talking about like supporting queer people as a presumed to be straight male, those will probably be the people who are more apt to try it. You know what I mean? They'll be more progressive minded. So I would say stand in your politics. I think where a lot of people mess up with this is they are so busy trying to conceal, don't feel, don't let them know that they...
Wow, Disney is all throughout this episode.
It is.
That's alarming.
They are trying to conceal and not let the girls know. Yeah. And they end up supporting and surrounding themselves with people who are anti what they believe in because they want to appear more a part of the group. Don't do that. Right. You want to find the queer girlies and then associate yourself with them.
Yeah. And I also think, I mean, I think like Durant, like what Randy said, I think it's hard to kind of be one or like the other, like in that sense, or be able to navigate it. I think one of the things that you can do is, if you are, say for instance, if it's you're meeting somebody or getting to know somebody in whatever capacity, I think the transparency in like, hey, like this is where I'm at. Like I'm, you know, I'm somebody that's exploring. Because the thing about it is I think that when there's an honesty in that way, I think more people will validate you in that sense, right? Versus it being like, nah, like I don't do this, I don't do that gay shit. Like all I, you know what I'm saying? Like this is just a one time thing. Like when you do that, that it makes people more susceptible to want to talk about it and be like, girl, let me tell you what this, but if you're being honest and true about like where you are in the space, I think that people are more inclined to not, I want to say have grace, but there's grace there, right? To where they're like, okay, like I get that, you know what I'm saying? So I think that would be like ideal. Of course, I don't know if that's always, you know, because there's some messy girls out here and they'll be like, girl, he was talking about he didn't know he, anyway. So I also agree with Randy. I think like aligning yourself with people that are not necessarily in agreement, but are in spaces where you can be able to explore those things. And furthermore, gain insight about what that looks like. Like there's, I think the thing too is like with sometimes with DL men, there's probably one specific idea of what they have or what gay is because that's been what's ingrained in their mind. And it's the flamboyant, uber feminine, overly like, you know, yes. overtly like.
That's why I didn't want to come out for so long. I was like, it seems like it's so much and that's not how I do.
Yeah. And I think that that's the thing. Like, I think, you know, and that's also what's portrayed in like the media, right? Like a lot of time, that's what you're seeing. So if that be the case, then if I was a man who didn't identify with that, then I would definitely be like, no, like that might not be who I am or what I am because that's all that I know it to be from what everybody else is saying, right? And I think that if some of these communities, and it's not always the case, but I would presume that a majority of men who are coming, who are in the DL arena or living like, you know, or being or in the DL space are coming from environments where they're not exposed to other people or other types of queer, you know what I'm saying? Or where it's not accepted or so, you know what I'm saying? So I think like to Randy's point, like exposing yourself to more areas about it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to automatically identify as anything, but you at least have exposure and have some type of like context to what that could be or what it is and what you don't want, right? You learn what you want, you learn what you don't want.
And that's a really good point too, because I feel like with how the media portrays queer culture sometimes, and I mean, even I talked about in one of our previous episodes how I was like, this seems like a lot. It doesn't seem like me. And it wasn't until my cousin came out and I was like, oh, there are actual like gay people in real life who aren't.
Yes. Yes.
They're not suddenly different because they're out. Like they're still just the same person. Yeah. And like, I can just still be me and be queer. Yeah. Like that's a big part of it.
And I don't know if y'all have seen this, and maybe this, and I think this might be another conversation, but there's been this meme that's been going around between like Billy Porter and Coleman Domingo. And people are like, see, this is the way that it should be for a gay man. And all I'm thinking in my head is, see, that's the problem. We're trying to like differentiate like one style of a queer man is like the staple of what we're supposed to be.
No.
Like there's people who don't identify with the way that Coleman Domingo looks. And there's people who extremely are identified with how Billy Porter presents himself.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I think that's, again, it goes back to the point of where like there are vast identities of what that looks like. I have plenty of friends that I know that don't dress nothing like either of them. And they wouldn't dare wear any colors like that. They'd be like, girl, that might run out. You know what I'm saying? So I just think that again, like, I think accessibility and exposure to different types, to the different degrees of what queer looks like, especially in the Black community, because there's levels to that, right? As we said, there's like subcategories and there's sub genres, if you will, in all of that. So, and you may fit in one and you may fit in 12 or you may fit in none, right? And all that is still okay. Like that doesn't change that you are not queer in that sense.
Yeah. I also think, it's easier said than done. You know what I mean? Like, cause some people come from, like for me, the city I'm from is like hella religious. It's like Baptist churches everywhere. Like it was really, really, really difficult to be queer. Like I had support from my family. So it made it a little bit like I was insulated because I could live and I knew I wasn't going to stay there after high school.
Right. But
like if you are a person who is in a space that is like very, 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 very religious, I think it is harder to do because it's almost like I feel like the church sends people on like a witch hunt to find queer people. it's like the church is paying people to discover and oust queer people. And you can even see it in some of the dialogue that is had. Like, it's just such a, I don't know. It just feels somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I think if you're not in an environment that's, again, conducive for you to be able to explore, then you're going to continue to just kind of go with what you know. Like, I mean, you become a creature of habit at that point.
Yeah, you're in a vacuum.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, you don't know what else to do. So you're going to continue to do what you've normally done and not shake the boat because I think that's also the thing too, where there probably has been the thing too, where people have seen other people come out and see their experience. And they're like, I don't want that. I don't want that. I'd rather live in secrecy or I'd rather like, not let anybody know or conceal, as Randy so eloquently said, And that let nobody know anything, because I've seen the ramifications of what happens if I did decide to come out, right? Because, and again, our community has created that kind of environment to where people don't feel safe to do it. They don't feel safe to be in it, and they don't feel safe to come out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those things.
And now we're in a vicious cycle, because it's like, if I am a man and I am told, hey, hell is coming and everybody's going to hate you if you're gay, then I'm going to feel pressure to perform being straight, even if I'm not. And then that is inevitably going to hurt somebody who is actually straight, because they're going to end up with me and it's not who I am. You know what I mean? And then they're going to take that back to the church. The church is going to preach it back out. It's going to be the next generation of people. They are going to hurt people. And we're going to go back through the cycle again.
Yeah.
It's like, it never ends.
Yeah.
So if I could have a call to action for our community, I feel like it would be to build spaces where people feel safe, because we are the most safe as a society when everybody feels comfortable expressing who they truly are. You don't have to agree with it, but if you create space for truth to exist, at least you'll know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
At least you'll know.
It's out there. It's at least there's visibility to it, right? Like, it's visibility. And I think also, like, just kind of another call to, like, the community too, is like, we have got to stop being so hard on what masculine and feminine is. I think, especially in the Black community, right? Especially like seeing all those posts when they were like, the girls told my son, oh, he's sassy if he do this. Those posts wear me out, because now you're putting this like even they be joking, you know, like, oh, if he smoke hookah, like, he's sassy. Like, even though it's a joke, it's still like, there are some people who actually really will check themselves and how they do things because of commentary like that. Oh, girl, if he eat a banana like this. Like, girl, it's a banana.
Men are scared of suckers,
if he ain't break it off first. What?
Popsicles. Just
like,
nothing.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, we make, oh, he crossed his legs, which is insane to me, because I think about the Harlem Renaissance, and even like the way that like Black culture was, even like when you think about some of the older generations, like, men crossing their legs was a form of stature. It was a form of like showing like you had like dignity and all those things. And now it's, you know, automatically if a man crosses his legs, we take it so far, and we get so, and I think it goes back to us defining masculinity and it being where it has to be this hard, tough thing. It doesn't. Masculinity has so many different forms and variations. Like, it just baffles me, and I just really wish that as a community, we would relax. Just relax. And like,
things change over time. Like, the things change, and it's so crazy because we keep moving the goalposts for what masculinity is. Like, if you look up old school photos of Michael Jordan when he was on his come up days, he was wearing booty shorts.
I mean, wasn't all of the NBA
hoochie daddy?
But that's the whole
hoochie
thing.
Daddy.
And now it's like, I can walk outside with some little hoochie daddy shorts on, and then here we go. It's me being feminine. It's me being a sissy. But it's like, most of the men y'all know.
Right. But listen, but even like, I remember seeing that video of like I think it was like the Isley Brothers, right? Where they had one of the album covers, and there was a guy with like a crop top. They had they had the slick hair, and I'm like, this was the pillar of what masculinity looked like at this time. Mm-hmm. If I come outside and wear that now, they're gonna be like, oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then even talking about like the hoochie daddy
God
shorts,
you bump your ends like James Brown.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Anderson .Paak kind of made it kind of cool again. I ain't gonna hold you.
But you know what I'm saying? That's why I feel like people get so caught up on like trying to. I always think of things as a continuum, right? Like there's like, I don't ever think there's a stop and a start. Kind of like what you said, Randy. Like, there's like no specific destination. So I look at like sexuality. I look at like even just identity, I look at it as a continuum. It's always going, and there's always something there, but it's not always going to end up on the same point. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can stop it. So I just always find that interesting that we get so caught up and bogged down with like, oh, well, if they do, because now all the straight boys, there's a lot of men wearing hoochie daddy shorts. And all I'm thinking is, that is so old and tired. I've been doing that for years. Y'all late. And now all of a sudden it's cool. Bye. Like,
well,
get out my face.
I just want to take a moment to throw out my call to action. Summer's right around the corner. It's going to get warm. If any of my masculine people, you know, try on that crop top.
Yes.
Try it on. Just get you a nice
put
mesh.
It on.
You know, put something. Yes. Let your stomach, let your midsection breathe. Mm-hmm. Let me know how you feel. I for one would just appreciate it if we could just make that a more a masculine just, thing again. You know, let's have a crop top Sunday.
Yeah. Crop top Sunday. I'm okay with it.
It's interesting in having these conversations with you all, and like it kind of has become a journey of self-discovery a little bit. But Bo, every episode saying, like critiquing kind of how queer people try to navigate these binary roles. This episode, I probably understand it the most. You know what I mean?
Because the shit is stupid. Why I'm the like, fuck are we so hung up on binary when we're queer? It's like people are beating us over the head with the binary. Yes. I'm like, let it die.
Yes.
We are already queer. We do not have to subscribe to this. And it's just, it's in everything. And it just irks me. I'm like, everything is not so fucking binary.
The problem of DL men solely exists because of what Bo is saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. If we just abolished the binary, we wouldn't have this problem. Men would feel comfortable coming out. And then if you are a woman who is like, look, I don't really want to deal with a DL man, don't.
Don't.
He not won't be a problem, BL. Girl. You would know. You would know all of the men who would. You would have your pick of the,
they wouldn't even
the particular
exist.
Straits that you were looking for.
They wouldn't
for.
Even exist. They would not even exist, sis.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I agree. And they will come. Look.
Huh? Okay.
The binary is whack.
Yeah. And now what I will say on the sense of binary, I do think that in relationships, most people do balance each other out in aspects. And I think, but I don't think that that necessarily has to be associated with like binary, right? Like there's certain, like me and my partner, he gets cold real fast. I get hot real fast, but I don't consider that necessarily being like, you know what I'm saying? I don't want people to get those aspects different where it's like, oh, well, he got to be the one to always hold me or he got to like that kind of thing. Nah.
Subscribe to the binary as much as it's more, are we equally yoked?
Right. That
in
part.
The spaces that I fall short, can you pick it up? In the spaces that where part. You struggle to balance, can I pick it up? Like, you know,
And are you doing what makes me feel good? And vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there will be some things. I know if you're a person listening to this, you're like, damn, do I need to change everything? That's not what we're saying.
Please don't.
We're saying find what works for you and don't feel like you need to adhere to rules that already exist because they predate your existence. Like,
yes.
Like, my husband opens the doors for me. That is what it is. We could see it as Randy is an effeminate bottom. And so his husband is doing this in order to support this gender role. But that just is who we are. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sometimes we align, sometimes we don't.
Right. You better open that door. I know that's right.
Period.
Okay.
Shout out to my man.
Ooh.
Well, on that note, I think this is an excellent place to put a pin in this conversation. I, for one, would like to stretch my legs. So I'm going to do that. And I hope you, listener, are able to stand up, take a break, stretch, shake some ass. I don't know. Do what you got to do. Get some water. We'll be right back, though.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Black Inquiry. As y'all already know, this is my absolute favorite segment. Word on the curb.
Word on the curb.
Word on the curb.
Word on the curb is Robin Dixon finally got fired from Housewives of Potomac. Let's talk about it.
Finally is wild. Finally.
It was well deserved. Period. That's what it's given. Honestly, I am so glad that the Housewife franchises are cleaning house. I don't know about y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel any nostalgia for any of these people. I think that after they make a certain caliber of money, we start to see inauthentic presentations.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, it's the same as like, I love my girl Nene, but Nene falls into this too, where Nene was in her most entertaining when she was like broke Nene and getting things. Once she got to be rich Nene and she could say she had FU money, it ain't fun no more.
Right.
I mean, I still have fun, but I do understand the sentiment.
But Robin, I am so glad. And I need Giselle to be fired too, but I understand that she won't because every show needs a villain.
And she is it every season. Every season.
But this news made me so happy when I saw this come across my screen, because Robin and Giselle have just done so much harm on this franchise. They have done so much. They are constantly making colorist statements, constantly being like anti-Black. Them calling themselves the Green Eye Bandits is icky to me. And
cringe.
And it's just like, oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad to have them out of here. What are y'all
I'm curious, because I find that on all of the franchises that are more women relegated, or more women, more Black women relegated, so like Potomac, Atlanta, there's always, and even like going outside of the Bravo, like going into like Basketball Wives and stuff like this, there's always this conversation about colorism. And I'm so curious to like, if that is if some of that is derived from like production making some of that like focal, or if that's just like innate, like is that innate culture in like ways that they do? Because it comes up every season. There's always that situation where that's a thing.
Well, I think when you get go ahead, Bo.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, more to Potomac, it seems like that area specifically, because it's so white, I can easily see where that is a really big part of their day-to-day life. Yeah. Because
that's
one of the whitest areas in the country.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I also don't think Bravo has the range to edit it out. I really don't think that they're seeing it. And I think this is why Robin and Giselle get heat like they do, because we are getting an authentic portrayal of them. I don't believe there are enough Black people in the room at Bravo to understand when things are problematic. The same as when they had their season finale and they did the talk back or whatever, the reunion. And they did not have the range to discuss colorism. They didn't even understand what it was. You don't get a successful definition of colorism throughout that whole cast of people, degree or not.
That's,
And then Robin and Giselle created their own platform. They have a podcast called like Reasonably Shady. And they go on there and crack they are so problematic even on that platform. They, not too long ago, got drugged because they made comments about James Harden. And I'm going to read off the comment. Yeah. Okay. James Harden has a very like thick, like beard. Like a typical Black man beard. Yeah. It doesn't look bad at all.
Right.
And here's what they said. The most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And she said, there's probably fried chicken or chicken grease in it.
Bitch.
No.
Direct quotes. And it's just like, y'all are icky and disgusting. And that's not even like the worst of things that they have said. Like if they sat on the platform and just derogatorily talked about this man, and it's just like, y'all are villains.
And I wonder if they seemingly get some type of a pass because they are brighter, because they are light-skinned women. Because I feel like if it had been a dark-skinned
dark skin or darker skin.
I know what I'm
saying.
If it had been a browner person, a browner woman, okay, someone with a bit more melanin.
Browner is worse, by the way. Browner is definitely wrong. I promise you, browner is wrong.
Because they're brown. I can't say they're not brown. You know, like. But I prefer darker.
I'm sorry. I'm saying, I cannot let that one go. Okay,
if they had more, like, if they were darker, right, I feel like there's always, and it shouldn't be, and it's not fair, but the second anyone who is dark-skinned says something like that or makes a comment or does absolutely nothing at all, it's like the internet and everyone else is quick to jump on their ass. So I'm like, why do they not get the same pushback?
But you know what, though? I'm actually, like, part of me is like, I feel like darker people don't say stuff like that.
No. Well,
I just think I was about to see. I was about to get this canceled. I was about to say a whole bunch.
Boosie, we can go down this.
Yeah, but let's talk about people. Not trying to be funny. See, I was about to drag them and say, let's talk about relevance, and not. So if that be the case, I just feel like most people. I don't know. I feel like if you are somebody who is already oppressed in certain aspects, you're more mindful than to not say things that are also like oppressive or, I don't know. It just,
I don't understand why either of them have all these things to say, especially when like they're divisive. They're so divisive. Everything that I think about every time that I've seen episodes, because I'm not an avid watcher of that particular season of that particular cast, but every time that I watch it, it's extremely divisive, and I'm like, y'all, like, come on, like, y'all actually have a platform to really uplift like Black women in a like high society, right? And y'all are just like not. Trash.
I think we also talk about on this platform like a lot how being at the bottom of systems makes people feel like they can like violate you or like harm you, and it's justified. Yeah. I think Robin and Giselle and that whole green eye bandit comment is kind of acknowledging that they exist at the upper end of most of the systems that are crushing other people. With it's the green eyes and the lighter skin and the less African hair texture, and they understand that because the Black community has like a thing for wanting to be attached to them, they will allow them to get away with murder just so they can claim them as a part of the group. And Giselle particularly, I know she understands this because Giselle's father is Curtis Graves, who, if you do not know, is a huge, or was a huge civil rights activist, like alongside Martin Luther King, civil rights activist. She does not come from a slouch family where she would not know this information. She's very well aware and cognizant.
Well, in her defense.
Well, Portia didn't know what the Underground Railroad was.
She did not know what the Underground Railroad was. With Martin Luther King as well. And so it seems as though a lot of the civil rights descendants are not.
Look, I'm looking at Martin Luther King camp with a squint.
I would say that it's very similar to like, oh, well, your daddy's a pastor. That means, you know, the whole Bible. Don't ask me to quote everything, because I promise you, I'm going to say Leviticus 58 and 59. I don't know if that's the verse. I don't know. Don't be asking me all these questions. I think it's the same thing where they don't get a pass because because their parents were, or their grandparents were. No, absolutely not.
I'm looking at her with a side eye and a squint.
The Underground
Railroad.
Y'all.
The Underground Railroad is crazy.
It is. I keep thinking about Portia, and really she was perplexed. She was like, I'm sorry. That episode really took me. I was like, why don't she understand what the Underground Railroad
is? Is there even a 58 to Leviticus?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I was saying, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was my point. That was my point.
I don't think it goes that far, huh?
It don't go that far. It definitely doesn't go that far. I do know that.
Could have fooled me. You could have told me what it said. I would have had
you. Well, yeah, because that's what the folks be doing in the churches. Okay. But yeah. I just think it's extremely divisive. They're very divisive, which is unfortunate because, again, like sometimes when I see some of these shows, and it's interesting, my partner does not like reality shows. He hates them. Oh. And I can understand why, because even though it's entertaining, there are still elements of it that are extremely, it does, again, kind of put us at a trespass for the entertainment of other people that may not even be part of our culture. Like, other people are watching this and are like, see, this is, ew, I love watching them Black folk act like that to each other. Whoa. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's a minstrel show because it's not to that capacity. However, it still has the same effect where it is like, let's show our, almost our stupidity and our simpleness, and let that be very like, just kind of, y'all don't agree. Y'all making faces, which are. Oh, I got scared. I was like,
look. Because somebody is slamming something outside my window. Like, I don't know if they're throwing up against the gate. I'm like, you listen. I'm about to open the window in your country.
I was like, Lord, I'm not making
you in danger, bro.
Right. Because you heard it. It did sound like danger. Like,
get on the floor.
Hey.
I'm stopping because I was about to mess up the words.
I was waiting for that next lyric.
Okay, come on.
Something. I know the melody, and I think that's important. Knowing the melody is just as important as knowing the actual words. So,
period.
Boo.
Come on, you tell them, Raymond.
Yeah, 16 carat gin.
It's the because that's not even the melody. He says
it's really not.
Carriages.
I didn't want to overshoot. So, you know.
Oh,
anyway, okay. Y'all some haters. Y'all be
haters. We love you.
We love you, Raymond.
I love y'all too.
And we can't stand Robin and Giselle. And I'm glad that Robin has gone to her rifle day.
You know she's gonna pop up somewhere else.
Of course. Oh, it's really given. It's given when Malaysia and Brandy from Basketball Wives, I don't know if y'all remember this, but when Brandy wasn't on the show anymore because she basically told Shawnee, like, F you. And Shawnee was like, thank you for your services. And then, like, two seasons later, she just randomly shows up with Malaysia and, like, tries to, like, skate her way back. It was a whole thing. Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. I was a Basketball Wives fan. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Nope. Bye, well, Robin.
Bye-bye. Adios. Word on the curb is Serena Williams is interested in looking into purchasing a WNBA team. She went on an interview with CNN on today because the draft is today on Monday. Also, shout out, Angel Reese just got signed to Chicago. So,
hey.
Yes, I know. I'm so excited. She went on an interview with CNN and she said that she would absolutely be interested in buying or investing in a WNBA team, quote, with the right market. I would definitely be super interested in that. She goes on to say, I think women's sports is having a moment that it should have always had. And I feel like tennis has had its moment. It's international and it's huge and it's always going to be there. Now it's time to lift up other sports, women's soccer, women's basketball. There are so many other sports that women do so great. Let's put it on the platform that tennis is on. Women's basketball is getting there and it's arrived. And when she was asked about the potential risk of investing in a WNBA team, she cited the recent NCAA tournaments that saw way more viewers tune in than like ever to the national championship between Iowa and South Carolina. So much so that like one of them, I forgot the team name, but they just hosted SNL even though they lost. Anyway. But she said there is no risk. She said women's sports is exciting. Women are exciting to watch. It's an overly safe bet when it comes to investing. Let's talk about
legit.
I think that's great.
Legit.
I am screaming. I am so happy for her. And I just think this last couple of years has definitely given a lot of attention to female sports, period. Like from the Brittany Griner situation and all of that. There's been a lot of focus in this area. And I'm glad that she is entering the space because she can do so much. And I think she already is like a figurehead for female empowerment in sports and sports excellence at that. And I just think her moving to this space, it's kind of like how Beyonce is like moving through the music industry. This is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I live for this.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I was on a call with some of my frat brothers and they were talking about the game. And I was just like, oh, I didn't get to watch the entirety of it. But then of course saw that South Carolina one. But they're like, man, like, yo, like I had to make sure that I was sitting down for the whole thing. I wasn't getting in. It's just like, and the thing about it is like women's sports, like I always say this. I say that I feel like there's so many more stakes for them, right? There's so many more things that they are having to combat just to be seen, which is crazy, but they play in a different form because they're not playing just to win the game. They're playing because they literally not necessarily having to prove things, but there's so much more weight on their success, you know what I'm saying, than what it is for like men who are just people going to just go to the game because the notoriety of it being a men's game, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, so I think it's great that Serena is like, you know, even considering undertaking that. And I think that will also open up for other women who are in other sports to also do that. So she's actually really causing a ripple effect, if you want to be honest. Like, there's going to be other women that's going to say, dang, you're right. Like, this is what we need to be investing in. Let's make this bigger. And there's so much women empowerment going around in general that I'm here for it. I'm here for it. And when we went to the Sky game, I was like, yes. Absolutely. I was like, I need to come to more of this. Like, this is great.
Because we need to get a crew together and do that again. Like, I want to support the movement of like...
After the Sky Games?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Sky Games.
Listen, let's talk about it. Because Diamond DeShields, she used to play for Dallas. And she, this season, just got traded to the Sky. And y'all, Diamond, if you ever by chance just come across this audio clip, this soundbite, this podcast, Diamond, hear me out. I'm just saying we could be magical.
Not shooting your shot over the podcast.
Yes, Diamond, I'll change your life. Best thing you don't even know that you need. I'm just saying. Okay.
So everybody that's on listening to podcast, go ahead and tag Diamond so that so she can
if y'all
see
know
this.
Diamond, if y'all know somebody who knows somebody. Child. Listen, my courtside looks would eat. I a buffet.
And you would. I believe
would
now that
tear
I believe
up a courtside look for Diamond. Listen, okay. Diamond, you got me.
Okay.
Both said diamonds are made under pressure, but wait, there's more. Ha ha.
I'm gonna give you the pressure. I'm just saying. But no, I do
that
think
good.
That she...
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. There's listen, I'm trying to keep it cute. not do too much. You know, you don't want to be scaring the hoes.
Right.
But I do think it is like the best time for this. Like even...
Yeah.
We've just never seen women's basketball have like a bigger moment than it's having now. I mean, like the fact that old girl from Iowa was on SNL, like y'all lost the championship.
Right.
And you still end up popping in.
Caitlin
Clark.
SNL,
yeah,
by the way.
It was Caitlin Clark. She did the cameo on SNL this weekend. And it's like, you ain't even win. And you still, everyone still knows you because of how good that game was and the tension leading up to it. But like, this is the moment. Like, the soil is ready. Like, plant the seeds.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm here for that.
And I
also
look forward to helping to water.
Okay.
I'll do my part.
I'll bring the water. I can be the water. I can be the water boy. I'll do that. Like, I meant, like, literally. I know y'all meant figuratively, but I meant, like, literally, I'll be the water boy. I really want to be a cheerleader for the women's team. I'll be real happy. I'll be like, yeah,
okay. I got some water. I'll keep the crops moisturized. Don't worry. You got to worry about that.
Saturate the soil.
Okay, put me courtside. Get a mop.
Oh,
not clean up on aisle 10.
Listen.
Oh, but
make
for real,
me
call
sweat.
Me Diamond. Okay.
Make me wand. Is that right?
Yes.
I got it.
Ooh. Yes. Oh my God, that was right. That was right.
Y'all didn't know.
What's the
I
next
knew
lyrics?
Wait, what did you say? Did you say make me sweat? Make me what? Did you say?
Make me water, right? Is that wrong? Oh, okay. All right. Never mind.
It's hotter.
I tried. Is it really?
It's make me harder, make me lose my breath, make me water.
Oh, the water's at the end. I knew that it was close, though. So I think I should get half points for that. That's okay.
We'll give you half points.
We gave you a premature celebration this time.
We did. Don't worry.
And did. Disappointed. Disappointed in the end. Dang.
Foolishness.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Serena. Very excited about that. Make it happen. We got your back. The community, I feel like the community absolutely has Serena's back and everything that she does.
For sure.
So, I mean, we ready when you are, Serena.
End of time. Give these women their fucking things.
Please.
Give them their things.
And pay them adequately.
Them. Mm.
That's in the
pay
thing.
Pay them.
Give them their things. Give them their bags.
Please.
Mm-hmm. Give them their briefcases.
Hello. Very that.
But thank you so much for listening to this episode of Black Inquiry. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Black Inquiry. Randy Nigel, where can people find you?
You can find me at Randy Nigel. That's RandyNygel on Instagram.
And Raymond Wise, where can folks find you?
You can find me at Raymond Wise on Instagram. RayMondWise. Ooh.
Wow. And Diamond DeShields, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at BodaBaddie, BodaBaddie. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next week.
Yeah.
One of our interns here, she said that you make music for gays.
I do.
I'm not the intern. I mean, she looked at me like...
What's wrong with that?
Nothing at all.
Nothing's wrong with it.
So...